would assume that the department audits one of these things, it would have to rely on some generally accepted definition of employee.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Representative Katulski carried a bill on the floor the other day, and that question was asked of him, and the definition was 17 and a half hours per week. Was at least 17 and a half hours a week for an employee. That was for a health care bill, as I recall. I think we may want to have that definition.
Representative Traherne?
I think he indicated, if I understood him correctly, that that was a definition of a quote full-time employee.
Full-time employee, that was.
Which seems like an awfully low number.
Yeah, that's what struck. That's why I hit the old head and stay here. I wondered, this applies to full and part-time. So if 17 and a half hours a week is a full-time employee, what's a part-time employee?
Drop by once in a while.
If you note that the $2,500 per employee is used is a limit on the credit in two cases. One is when the employer is providing a dependent care assistance, that is paying for your dependent's care during the day. Well, in order to run up a $2,500 credit, your employer would have to contribute $5,000 toward the taking care of the child or your dependent. And if you're a part-time employee, it's not likely your employer is going to run up a $5,000 bill taking care of your kids for you. So I'm not sure it's a big problem. The other use of the $2,500 is in the construction, on the construction side, which has that limit as well as no more than 50% of the cost, as well as no more than $100,000. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Jones,
we might consider the facility being limited with full-time employee. There's a definition in the statute of it. The only thing that's the only place I, otherwise the employer's not going to put out. I think appropriately, the employer has to spend the money before he gets the credit.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that they aren't putting themselves by the fact that they're. Whereas a facility could get more credit because they had several part-time employees that they were using to count up the numbers.
Yeah, 50E type of thing.
Is there language that we can find that does this, or do we have to construct for the purposes of this committee and this credit a definition of employee?
I'm sure there are definitions of employee out there.
Gary's not. Yeah.
Chair.
It just seems like we called it a full-time employee and let the department define that by rule would probably be a lot simpler.
Well, what we're talking about now then on page 22 line, or page 1 of the amendments, line 22, deleting the and part business so that that when we reference capital construction, we only reference full-time employees when they calculate the cap.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where we are now?
I was
trying to focus. Okay. Let me try this. Representative Calori, if you'd like to make a motion,
sure would.
We'll have.
Can I make a comment about what Barbara and I talked about, this calculation of the number of employees. One of the firms that was interested in the possibility of building a daycare center or renovating a building was a canning company here in town, which has a fluctuating employment level over the year. During canning season, they have a lot of employees, and the other times they don't. So that's why we, in a sense, have it fairly broad here, including full and part-time, and taking into account the maximum amount of employees over time. So that's why it was written the way it was. I guess not trying to argue against but there are different situations.
Because procedurally, what I was trying to do is see if we could adopt dash 4. Then, if we need to amend this part, we can focus our discussion strictly on that part. But we can at least get behind us what we do agree on, and then we'll see where we go from there. So,
you want me to move dash 4?
Right. Representative Calori moves the adoption of the amendment Senate Bill 734-4. there any objection? Okay. Now, then we want to deal with full part-time employees. What is it? Shatter your eardrums.
No, it's sharp. I'm sorry.
Put a pad of paper underneath it. Too much partying last night?
No, you woke John and I up, though.
Haven't got used to the new table. No. It has some extra sound on it.
A question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hugo?
On this section, page 1, line 22, if a person had 40 employees, would that max them out of the credit?
Limiting it to $100,000 would mean $200,000 worth of construction.
It's 50%.
It'd be 80 employees times 2,500.
Mm-hmm. Are cannery workers classified as full time during the time that they're working in the cannery?
I think they are, aren't they?
I think they do work full-time, but I am not sure what if there's any technical definition and difference between full and part-time. I'm not familiar with
that. Employment division probably is where that's...
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we've got all these categories in the bank, except seasonal, and I suppose we even do have some seasonal, but let's call them permanent part-time, temporary part-time. And they've got all different permutations and these things.
We do too.
But I'm confident that a full-time employee that is doing seasonal work would be considered a full-time employee. They are for unemployment purposes, for example, workman's compensation.
Okay, we'll establish intent of this committee as if we limit it to full-time, that seasonal people who are employed on a otherwise full-time basis are counted as full-time employees.
Mr. Chair, I need to clarify that too. It's determined by the full-time is the relationship to the hours they work, not the permanency of the job.
Okay. So then is the motion to, on line 22, to just say, to delete and part, or to somehow say, are 2,500 times the number of full-time employees?
Fine with me.
Representative Trey Aaron.
Mr. Chair, I think full-time or full-time equivalent are however we
Okay, Representative Trey Aaron moves on line 22 that we delete the material in parentheses and that we insert before the word employees the words full-time.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schoon.
I think I would actually prefer the full-time equivalent in there, because that way if you've got two people that are job sharing, then you can count them as one.
I was thinking too.
If George agrees to that.
That was my thought.
Okay. Actually, Representative Trahern moved that we put after the of on line 22, full-time equivalent, and delete the material.
That's what an employee was.
In the parentheses. Got that, Janine?
No problem.
That's exactly what he moved. Is there any objection to that? How's that?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 734 as amended by, we have already amended it, as amended to the floor with a two pass.
Okay, Representative Clory moves Senate Bill 734 as amended to the floor with a two pass recommendation. Discussion? Dean, would you call the roll?
Representative Clory.
Aye.
Gold. Hamlin.
Aye.
Hugo.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
McCarty. Trahern.
Aye.
Schoon.
Aye.
Hostetler.
Aye. Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clory.
I was just going to ask to carry it. I'm one of the sponsors on the bill.
Representative Jones. As a sponsor, we'll let you carry it. Is anybody else on this committee a sponsor?
Schoon's a minor sponsor.
Oh, I see.
That's right, Schoon's a minor sponsor.
As a co-principal sponsor. Okay. Uh-oh, are we going to have to reconsider the vote to insert the statutory reference to employee?
I just found one.
Okay.
It doesn't distinguish between full-time and part-time here, though. It doesn't get, maybe somewhere in here it'd get to the issue. That's all right.
Okay, Senate Bill 978. I understand that's Steve's bill. That has to do with the tax equity program. We have had a hearing on this issue. I didn't have a memory of that hearing because I guess I wasn't here when that hearing was held. However, my impression of the fate of this effort, and as members will recall, the revenue forecast and the budgeting process is going on with the assumption that $36 million will be put in the state budget, or resources will be available through tax equity and increased enforcement by the department. Whether or not that $36 million is realized is partially a function of this bill and partially a function of whether or not the Ways and Means Committee will fund additional employees for the Department of Revenue to do the additional enforcement. Depending on whether the outcome of the final negotiations on the budget picture, question of whether the department will fund any or all of the employees required for enforcement is still open in Ways and Means. The piece that they don't have or that isn't in place in order to do that is this bill, which provides for the tax equity or tax amnesty portion of that program. So does this bill have a subsequent on it to Ways and Means?
Yes.
So it would be the question before this committee is, should we move this bill to Ways and Means, thereby essentially giving them, as I said in one discussion, that Ways and Means hasn't been playing with a full deck, and we're going to give them the last card necessary to play with a full deck as far as the issue is concerned of budget balance.
Send the elevator over the top.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hanlon.
Did you consult with the speaker on her opening ceremony before you made that comment?
I take that as a rhetorical question. Representative Fraser.
I think it's fair to say also that the anticipated income for the state without this bill is more than adequate to meet the proposed budget. So to suggest that that they have to have this to be able to balance the budget, I'm not saying that you said that, but I'm not sure that it's really necessary for it to go down there for that purpose, even though I grant you what you did say is correct, that they have been kind of throwing that in there somewhere.
Well, when they use the number $120 million projected ending balance, they are counting these revenues in that. If this bill didn't pass and the additional enforcement wasn't available and the other pieces of the governor's proposed plan passed, then the ending balance would be reduced by that 36 or 31 million. Let's say it'd be reduced by 36. The 4 million which would be spent on this program would be spent on something else, so that we'd be looking at an ending balance of 84, so what would it be, rather than 120.
120 is, everybody agrees, is too high a figure now. Anyway.
Right. You're talking about 111, I think, was
or
the last time.
Or 108, I see.
Yeah.
Going down, we get out of here.
so that
about $1 million a day.
And seeing Mr. Mapes here reminds us of what this discussion is all about anyway. That was whether or not the discussion is about making money for the state or whether the discussion is about enforcing your tax laws and whether or not you're trying to create a situation in which you do enforce your laws so that people will have some incentive or more incentive to pay their taxes, and those people who are paying taxes don't end up carrying the burden for the people who are avoiding taxes, and that the revenue that you would gain by increased enforcement is essentially irrelevant to the decision as to whether or not you want to have enforcement of your tax laws. I would say also, you know, one proposal which had been discussed was a proposal to say that since the state doesn't need the revenue that this program would produce, that if revenue were produced, put it in the common school fund. That was a proposal which had been discussed as it floated around, as this issue has floated around from room to room and hallway to hallway in the building. I guess we have the bill before us. I think we could discuss it, discuss whether we want to move it to Ways and Means, whether we want to condition it in any way, or just what we want to do.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Schoon.
Well, I would like to ask you as our chairman, who has been in the leadership meetings, I think, whether there's any thing about this issue that we don't know that we should know. It originally started out as a pretty important issue, and yet, for some reason, maybe our own fault, maybe self-induced, but we haven't chosen to take action on it until just now, and even now we're not sure what Ways and Means would do if we did send it down to them. So I guess
I'm well, I can give you a little bit of history. I don't think there's anything being concealed from anybody, but and I would say that just parenthetically, the fact that you chair this committee doesn't give you a lot of additional insight into what's going on in some of these decisions, at least this time through. as a frank matter, and I've discussed this with several people, since revenue is not a limiting factor in the budget balancing decisions, the importance of what we do in this committee to the final budget balance decision is diminished relative to where how important it has been in the past when revenue was the factor that limited everything else. Now, as the session started out, and Ann Hannes is here from Exec can refresh our memory, this $36 million was carried in the early forecast as an amount necessary to have any reasonable ending balance at all. Maybe if you want to come up and join us to add whatever insight you want to. As the forecast picture got rosier and rosier regarding the amount of revenue that would be available from current law, the importance of the revenue gain in this issue here diminished. Mm-hmm. And people said, well, as Representative Traherne has, we don't need this money. So interest sort of slipped as a revenue gainer. At the same time, down in Ways and Means, looking at a spending limit, looking at what started out to be a $4 million window and has now grown to, who knows, by the time we're done voting on things, it could be as much as a $55 million window when the legislature gets done with it. But when they're originally looking at a $4 million window, they said in Ways and Means, if we're going to spend $4 million, this program is not our top priority. When they were looking at an $11 million window, this program was not a priority. Now that they're looking at the potential of a $55 million window, then Ways and Means is saying, well, maybe we can find $4 million out of that $55 million, but also, since the governor had planned to spend some X amount, we don't know that the legislature will determine what that amount is in capital construction outside the spending limit, this becomes important to those ending balance discussions. And as I said, we could move the bill, we could sit on the bill. Probably doesn't make any difference. But if we thought it was good tax policy and we wanted to make a statement in terms of tax policy that we think this is something important, then I think we ought to move the bill.
Mr.
Representative Schoon?
Well, second question. do you or does leadership have any preference as to whether we consider the whole bill, including the amnesty provisions, or is the preference just for collections effort, increased collection effort? Is there any emphasis that anyone that you know of wants placed on this?
I think the emphasis, that as far as the leadership discussion is concerned, is strictly the dollars and cents portion. As far as this committee and the Department of Revenue is concerned, it's a policy question as how you run your tax collection system. And that's been, that was the difference early on, where I was urging, and in some meetings urging on the co-chairs of Ways and Means to fund the program, because we wanted to, you know, make, to set some tax policy. But the dollars go where they might. If you don't need the dollars, we'll find someplace else to put the money. So I think that option is still available to us to make that statement.
Mr. Chairman, the thing that I need to know, I think, sometime today is, since the people that would be paying us under an amnesty program have the ability to pay, or else they wouldn't pay us, how much more it would cost us in FTE and therefore dollars to force collection of those dollars, as opposed to providing the opportunity for these people to give us the money without paying the penalties and without any additional effort on our part.
Well, we could get that information. I would say, though, on that, the idea of the amnesty and the enforced collection is, if you don't have increased enforcement, then you're wasting your time on amnesty, because people who have been evading the taxes are going to know they're going to be able to evade them anyway. So why would they want to come in under an amnesty window if they felt that they could keep on evading? The reason why you need two pieces is, you say, okay, here's your window for amnesty. You could come in under that window, or if you don't come in under that window, which is December 31st, or some period of time here, November 2nd to January 22nd, if you don't come in under that window, then we're going to have the extra personnel and we're going to come after you. So your question is, how much would it cost to just go after them without the window? I don't know if that's any different than how much it costs to go after them with the window, but Steve, maybe you can answer that question.
I don't have an answer for that. Department may want to speculate on that.
Okay, why don't you, okay, thanks for being available. Department? Everybody?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Brown. I'm the administrator of the Audit Division for the Department of Revenue. The amnesty program and the tax equity program that you have a piece of before you today has about a $36 million revenue gain, and I believe $8.7 million of that is the amount that's estimated to come in during the amnesty window. The balance of that, would $28 million, would come in as a result of the additional audit and collection efforts after amnesty. So I guess, Representative Spoon, your question then would be, what sort of staff would it take to get in that additional 8.7? I think if you took, under the appropriation, the $4.8 million, about $400,000 of that is designed for advertising during the amnesty period. And I think if you took that money, about that amount of money, and just put it in additional staff, it would be just about equivalent to that $8 million raise. So I think you could do it for about the same $4.6 million either way, and that's a rough estimate. But
thank you. Hugo, are you trying to say something? Any other questions? So then, what you're saying basically is that if the department wanted to increase enforcement and raise money, they could do it without the amnesty for about the same amount of money.
Yes.
What do we gain by having an amnesty program?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, I think that the states, about 25 states, have conducted amnesty programs at this point. Some of the side benefits from amnesty, or the additional benefits from amnesty, are it does allow, as you indicated, it allows a transition from a period of somewhat mild enforcement into a period of much stricter enforcement, much more aggressive enforcement, that allows that transition, allows a window in that transition period for people to come forward without fear of any prosecution or any additional penalties and come forward and clean up their liabilities. So those states that have had amnesty programs that had sufficient additional resources and additional penalties at the end of the program have been very successful. I think it's a very positive step from the perspective of the citizens of the state. The Oregon State University Research Center has been doing a survey on tax compliance and on tax amnesty in particular, and it's surprising that the numbers of people that favor an amnesty program, whether they cheated or not, are very high. Of the people that responded to their questionnaire that said that they had omitted some income or had failed to report at one point or another, almost 57% of those during the survey said that they would take advantage of an amnesty period and come forward.
President Scoon?
Jim, you said they could do this without fear of prosecution or additional, underline it, additional penalties. Now, does that mean that we would impose the normal penalty, or would we be forgiving the normal penalties also, and or interest?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scoon, that is probably somewhat of a slip on my part. That the bill you have before you in the tax equity program that the governor has proposed originally was designed to forgive one-fourth of the balance, and the balance included tax, penalty, and interest. And in Senate revenue, there was some concern that message may lead people to believe that we were forgiving some of the tax, which in most cases, in almost all cases, it would not have done. So they amended that and made it a two-pronged test. We either would waive half of the penalty and interest or one-fourth of the total account balance, whichever was less. So that's the amount that would be waived. Now, there are, under current statute, there can be a series of additional penalties for failure to file, for example. The normal penalty would be 25%. But then if the department notified you of that failure and you continued to not file in response to notification, you could get a 50% or up to 100% penalty if we could prove intent to evade. That's where you could get some additional penalties.
Representative Jones and Representative
Baker. One of the things as I recall reviewing the amnesty programs that have been put in place in other states, much of the money that had come in was from sales tax, either from merchants or some sources of sales tax revenue as well. Do you have any? I presume that the states that you're talking about were sales tax states. Have you taken that into consideration when you're looking at your figures?
Yes, we have, Representative Jones. Some of the states, California, for example, included both sales tax and income tax. And most of the states that have both taxes have included both in their programs, and they have separate statistical data available as to how much collection came in from each specific program. I believe maybe Steve Meyer may be able to answer that question a little better than I can. It's been taken into account.
Representative Traynor?
Jim, I'm reminded of a couple months ago when this issue was being discussed a little more heavily. I went over across the street from my shop and stopped in at the cigarette store and went to buy a package of, or a carton of cigarettes, which the man charges $10 for. And he said, well, George, why don't you just go ahead and steal those, walk on out the door with them, and come back next week and pay me $7.50. And it's... how would you, he said that's very similar to what you're trying to do with this bill. You're trying to say to a crook, and that's what we're talking about here, something about let's give you a break if you pay up later, and less than what anybody else is paying. How do you respond to that kind of thing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Traynor, and I think that's part of the concern that the Senate Revenue Committee had in the perception where the original bill said we would waive one-fourth of the balance, because it gave people the perception that we would settle for three-fourths of the tax, which in your example, the merchant would be settling for three-fourths of the sales price. If you amend your example to include what would be applicable to income tax on your $10 carton of cigarettes, you'd have a $25 or or $2.50 penalty for stealing the cigarettes and interest at 15% of the current statute for a couple of years probably. So the total charges might be as much as 40%, so it might be a $14 balance now. And then you would get by for half of the penalty and interest, or $2 off. So you'd end up paying $12. So under this provision, you never get by with paying less than all of the tax and half the penalty and interest. That's the least you can get by with.
Is that Pamela?
No.
Oh, I still wasn't answering. Okay, Claudia Howell's been waiting patiently to share some concerns of the Public Utility Commissioner with us, and maybe we ought to ask her to come up. You could stay there, and she can explain what the concerns of the Public Utility Commissioner are. I think that has to do with the part of prohibiting state agencies from licensing or doing business with delinquent taxpayers. Mm-hmm. Is that certified delinquent, alleged delinquent, or?
That I can't answer. Thank you, Representative Hostica and members of